go! Welcome to the Tactical Entrepreneur Podcast with your host, Steve Schaubecker. Get ready to get behind the scenes look into what it really takes to grow a business from scratch in the firearms industry. Join us as we welcome industry titans, Second Amendment enthusiasts, and special guests each week. I welcome you to the Tactical Entrepreneur Podcast.
Welcome back to the Tactical Entrepreneur Podcast. This is Steve Schaubecker, your host. Glad you could join us for another episode. I am here with a very special guest this week, Mr. Scott Simons. Scott, how are you doing today, sir?
Hey, Steve, man, thank you for having me on your show. This is exciting. I'm really proud to be here, and I can't wait, man. I like guns. You know, you and I have a lot of things in similarities, so this ought to be fun.
Absolutely. Looking forward to it. Well, besides guns, cars, what else is there, right?
That's right. Guns, cars. You know, we both own businesses. We're both in Apex. You know, we were in Arte together. So this ought to be a lot of fun. You know, those groups tend to attract people that think the same way and have some of the same beliefs. So when I found out that you dealt guns and ammo, I'm like, that's my type of guy.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, it's interesting what happens when you put a group of people that are like-minded together, and like some of the magical things that'll happen. But certainly looking forward to getting to know you a little bit better here, and also letting our listeners get a chance to get some great insights from you. Know a little bit about your story here and there, but I'd love to hear and love for you to tell them about you know, I know that you're self-made, that you built your businesses on your own, and I'd just love for you to give a little bit of background so they kind of know what happened before the Scott you see today.
Yeah. So, thank you for that question. And again, thank you for having me on. So I'm originally from Southern West Virginia. I'm from McDowell County, West Virginia, and it is known as one of the poorest counties in the United States of America. Now, I didn't grow up poor. I grew up probably lower to middle class. I just, you know, didn't know. But I had two wonderful parents. I have a brother, an older brother. He's an ER doctor in Texas. So he got the brains out of the two. Most definitely, he's probably got the looks too. My mom's Italian, and he's more dark complected. We're Northern Italians, and I'm more lighter complected. I took after my dad. So my dad and mom, again, my dad worked five jobs. My mom was a lab supervisor. My dad never made more than $32,000 a year at one job. And we lived very much with a scarcity mindset, just pinched every penny, which is, that's fine. You know, that's my dad grew up during the Depression, one of nine. My mom was one of nine. Apparently in Southern West Virginia, you worked in the coal mines and you laid around and made babies. So you just worked in the coal mines. So I had a lot of aunts and uncles. But I learned work ethic from my dad. I got my personality from my mom. My dad pushed us, and my mom pushed my brother and I. I mean, anything we did, we had to do the best of our ability. It's our name. Yes, sir. No, sir. Yes, ma'am. No, ma'am. When you talk to an adult, when we worked, we started off with having a paper route. I remember back when I was going to high school, I got a job at a fitness facility, a nonprofit fitness facility. And I would go in my senior year of high school, to give you an example of how hard we worked. I would go in and open up that gym at like 5 a.m. I would work the gym 5 to 8. And I would, if some of the racquetball players didn't have their partners show up, they would say, hey, grab your stuff, boy. Let's go play. So I said, Dad, what do you want me to do? He said, well, they're the customers, you know, go play. So like, well, cool. I'm kind of like a semi-pro racquetball player. You know, I'm getting paid to play, you know, minimum wage at $4 an hour. I found one of my old pay stubs, like $4.75, $4.25, whatever it was. Of course, my dad didn't treat me any different. He paid us minimum wage. And it's crazy. My son works here for us at the, he's 14, washes cars, and he also does odd jobs. And I pay him minimum wage. And they're like, he's the only employee we got out of 180. We're paying minimum wage. I said, that's right. We're going to pay him minimum wage because he's got to learn. We don't treat him any different because he's my son. So I would go open up that gym, and I would go after that. I would go to high school, and I would go be in high school from like 8 to like 11 or 12, eat lunch. Then I would go to college. So I would take college courses at Bluefield State College. And I would go there till about 4, go back to high school, go to baseball practice, leave baseball practice at 6, grab dinner on the run, go back to the gym and work till 10. So, you know, I'm sure I violated some type of labor child laws, but I literally would work like 60 hours a week making minimum wage. I would do lock-ins where we would, you know, go in on a Friday night, lock in kids, you know, kids. And sometimes I was younger than them and I was in charge sometimes. So, you know, but that's just the way we grew up. I mean, my brother and I both were pushed like that. He graduated with his 4-year degree in 3.5. I graduated with my 4-year degree in 3 years, and then got my MBA in 1.5 and worked full time. But that's just what we were raised to do. I mean, other people that sit and say, man, that's remarkable. No, it was just, when your dad works 5 jobs and doesn't make more than $32,000 a year, everything your parents do is to give you and your brother the opportunities they didn't have. So my mom, dad, they paid for our college. They provided us transportation. They paid for my brother's medical school. That was $100,000. And, you know, when someone sacrifices that much for you, such as the brave men and women that go and sacrifice, you know, for our freedom, the police officers that go out and put their life on the line for us, I'm indebted to my parents to be the best version of me possible because of the sacrifices they gave for me. When that military person goes overseas or protects our freedom, I'm obligated to them. I never served, which is a big regret of mine. I am a sheriff's deputy reserve, which I signed up for. I was asked if I wanted to do that, and I was like, sure. I get a gun and a badge, and I have all the rights of a police officer. I got sworn in, so I said, absolutely, because I didn't like some of the things that I saw happen in this country. You know, some of the lawlessness, which, you know, I don't agree with at all. So, yeah, from there, started selling cars. So my dad said, wait a minute. You ain't got all this school and you're going to go sell cars? Hell, you could have just went and sold cars. You didn't. What the hell are you doing? Why did you go to? I said, well, Dad, no one could ever take it away from me. I learned a lot of life lessons by going to college. And I started off selling cars, and I had a dream of owning my own car dealership. So I had that dream when I was young because our first car was like a Chevrolet Celebrity. My dad paid $300 for. He took it to the Vogue school and had them fix it as a project. And I don't know if you're familiar with that. So we have vocational schools where you go, we donated our car for them to work on. These kids had never worked on before. Bondo falling out of it. It was a hunk of shit. Oh, by the way, is your podcast okay to cuss on? I think it's okay, right?
Yep, absolutely is.
Okay. Absolutely. Tee her high and let her fly. I don't know. I got to make sure I'm politically correct. You know, I don't want to be disrespectful, but I thought that, you know, that we could use a little language, but anyway, so we had the Chevrolet Celebrity, and I remember I'd say, Dad, you know, could you drop me off a little bit down from school? He said, why? I said, cause the kids make fun of me, Dad. He said, son, don't ever be ashamed of who you are. Don't ever be ashamed of, you know, of being a Simons and being conservative and saving your money, you know? And, so that's how I was raised. Start off selling cars, work my way into finance to a general manager. 11 years ago, I had opportunity to buy in my first car dealership, a group called Carter Myers Automotive Group, bought a competitor. They knew who I was. I knew who they were. A mutual friend got us together. They knew that I wanted a part owned a car dealership. They knew I'd turned around some car dealerships by building a really good team. And they said, hey, you want to come partner up with us? I said, it would be my honor. Are you kidding me? I've been, you know, this is a dream. So I had about 100 employees where I worked at before. The dealer had promised me that he would make me part owner. He was completely full of shit, never planned on it at all. I mean, I worked 9 years, bell to bell, 6 days a week, sometimes 7 days a week. I would go in and volunteer on Sundays, just take whoever would go with me because I had a goal. I needed to increase their sales to the point where people would ask who I was so I would get that opportunity. So I missed a lot. I mean, at one point, I was so fixated on my goal, I ballooned up to about 265 pounds. I was drinking every day, you know, not taking care of myself, and basically had like a heart attack or stroke in the showroom. They didn't know. They said, your face is so bloodshot red. And, you know, I was seeing kind of tracers. They took me to the hospital and they're like, we need to hit you with nitroglycerin because you're having a heart attack. And I said, well, y'all are freaking me out. Y'all need to let me go so I can get back to work. And they're like, no, you gotta make some changes, bro, or you're not going to be here. Cause I was already on the highest blood pressure medication possible. So, You know, and sometimes when you go through chasing through life, through that journey, you can be so fixated on hitting a goal that you just lose who you are. I became a monster because I knew the guy was lying to me. It was a very toxic situation. And I allowed that situation to dictate to me and change me. So I was a terrible husband, terrible dad, terrible friend, because I didn't care about nobody else but me. I wanted to hit a goal and I was going to get there. And if you couldn't hang with me, I was going to chew you up and spit you out. And sometimes I didn't understand why your goal wasn't my goal. Why don't you want to own a car dealership? Why don't you want this and that? And I learned some valuable life lessons. I mean, my wife basically had a, you know, heart to heart with me and said, look, you've done well financially, but if you don't make changes, you're going to die. And when you die, my new husband, which I'm going to marry younger, she said, is going to walk your daughter down the aisle. And I want you to really sit and think about that. And it pissed me off, man. I was pissed. You know, I'm 48. I met my wife when I was 17 and she was 15. So we've been together for over 30 years. This conversation happened about 15 years ago when I was 33. And I got angry, but then it woke me up and I said, wait a minute, who is it? I tell you what, I was in such a dark place, Steve, that I literally would shave with the lights off. And I don't know how dark of an human has to be where I didn't even want to see my own face. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I didn't even want to look in the mirror. So I would shave in the dark. And when I did, I would cut my face and I would get to work and be like, holy shit, did you get in a fight with the razor? Of course, you know, my face is substantially bigger. You know, I'm 50 pounds, 60 pounds heavier than what I am now. You know, I was completely morphed into a person that was unrecognizable because I was just not a good person. I was winning in business and I was losing everywhere else. Mm. And so I would shave in the dark. And then I started turning my life around. I started finding out what was important to people around me, building a team. And man, once I hit the lowest of lows, I took off. I took my health back, became a much better husband, much better father, much better friend. And then in about 4 or 5 years after that, I got a phone call. You know, hey, we're buying this store. When I left that dealership, I had 100 employees. 47 came with me to my new dealership. Not immediately, because when we purchased the dealership, we gave everybody an opportunity to keep their job. But as opportunities opened, I called people that I worked with. They're like, we're coming to work with you. I had two or three people cry. I mean, can you imagine the transition I made in 5 years where when I left, people were distraught and crying? They're like, we want to come with you. And I'm like, well, just stay because you've got a job. I can't promise you a job. I mean, let me go and see what happens. But if I get opportunity, I'll call you. Like, you better call me. A couple of them quit and just showed up and said, we're going with you. Hire us. You know, we're just going to sit here. We'll work. You know, basically, we'll just work for nothing until you hire us. So, I mean, it's a personal choice. Attitudes. And, you know, I would say my life really turned for the better, you know, when I cared about others more than I cared about myself. And it was, you know, but I had to hit rock bottom before that to happen.
Oh, that's a great story. What do you think the catalyst was, you know, for that? Was rock bottom when your wife sat you down and talked to you and said, you're going to die?
Yeah, that and the doctor. I mean, if I didn't make changes, brother, I wouldn't be here today. I mean, high blood pressures ran in my family. I was abusing alcohol. I was smoking cigarettes. I don't smoke cigarettes. Like, are you kidding me? I mean, I was hiding behind dumpsters smoking cigarettes, but picked up a terrible habit, which anybody that does that, you know, you're just killing yourself. And I was drinking. I was so miserable, brother. I would grab a 40 ounce on the way home, at least one. And I had a 10 minute ride home and I would drink at least one before I got home. And that's how miserable of a work environment and person I was. My wife said, how was work? Then she smelled alcohol. I said, where have you been? I said, I just on my way home. How has worked? I don't want to talk about it. What do you mean you don't want to talk about it? I said, I don't want to talk about it. Like, it's the owner there would come in, cuss people. We'd sell 17 cars successful. He would come in and basically call us all, you know, cuss words and this, that, and the other. And, but I, you know, I just had to keep plugging forward. Part of me thought he was going to stand up and do what he says to do. The other part of me knew he wasn't, but I didn't want to quit. You know, I didn't want to quit on my dream. And looking back on it, you know, I would have never got to where I'm at today if it wasn't for that experience, you know, but man, it's 9 years of my life, you know, that luckily my wife cared enough. And, you know, couple things I learned from that is, you know, when someone sits you down and has a heart to heart with you, listen, you know, if they truly care about you, they're going to say, hey, man, like this isn't you. And when my wife did that, and then when I knew in my heart, if I didn't make changes, I was going to die. And so when you have to do that, you know, it'd be nice if we all made changes when we didn't have to, right? but typically it's a business failure, health, relationship. I mean, you know, half of marriages end in divorce, and I can understand why. I mean, it's hard to stay married. It's a challenge. And, my wife and I are polar opposites, and we have our good days, we have our bad days. And, but you know, we are one team. We got two beautiful children, and we just work through it. But if anybody says this thing called life is easy, you know, just keep in mind, don't compare your real life to somebody else's perceived social media perfect life. It just doesn't exist. Life is a struggle, and it's how you fight through it. And even when you're, you know, considered successful, you know, it's still, you gotta get up and fight every single day.
Oh, absolutely. That's just, it's interesting about how much your story I can actually relate to, because we're almost the same age. I'm 47. I've been with my wife since we were both young. We will have been married in January for 25 years. Yep. And for me, I was on a crazy bad path too, health-wise. And in 2017, March of 2017, I went to a Warrior event. And it was a live event. And it was like a day and a half of doing all kinds of crazy stuff. Well, and I was at that time 370 pounds, worst shape of my life, could hardly walk up a set of stairs. But yet my stupid brain thought I was going to go to this event and do fantastic of this. You know, it's clearly a lot of physical stuff. You know, a lot of it was like based on, if you've heard of Seal Fitz Kokoro, just a shorter version of that, those sort of things, you know, walking down the beach with logs, all kinds of crazy stuff. Well, anyway, so I get there, it starts in the afternoon. Somehow, by just following the guy in front of me, make it through until the night. And then at night, they were going to let us go back and for a few hours to go clean ourselves up and get just a couple hours of sleep. By the time I got my clothes off and cleaned and ready to go for the next day, it looked like after 1 a.m, I think we were meeting again at 6. So I got a couple hours of sleep. And then I woke up and my whole body was in a Charlie horse. And I didn't know what was going on. I thought maybe I was having a heart attack, maybe something else was going on. But it subsided after a couple minutes, but my legs and stuff were still completely locked up in my midsection and didn't have any idea what to do. I'm like, I got to be ready to go. We're 5:30 or so. We were kicking off again. It's like, I got to be ready. So I didn't know what to do. At one point, I couldn't hardly pull myself out of bed. So I was like, should I just call an ambulance? Talk myself out of that, because funny thing is, I figured, well, if I do that, then the coaches are going to know what's going on with me. And then I don't know, they're going to make me do some more crazy shit, you know, and I'm going to yell that. And this is so like, no. So it took me about 25 minutes to get dressed and make it down to the lobby. So I went to the lobby and called an Uber and went to the emergency room. So wow. I'm at the emergency room. They're thinking I'm having a heart attack. So there's people running all over. And this was in Laguna Beach, California. People are running all over and whatnot and testing this and testing that. And they finally figure out that, okay, you're not having a heart attack. Now we think you have blood clots in your lungs. So emergency CT scan, which was an interesting experience, and more tests. And then, you know, this was, you know, 3-4 hours later now. And they figure out, no, you're not having a heart attack. There's nothing in your lungs. You have rhabdo. So I don't know if you heard of rhabdo before, but it's, you know, CrossFit guys get it. If you work your muscles past a point where they can, your brain should tell you to stop. Repeatedly, tissue starts to break down, getting your blood, and it can clog your kidneys and you can die. Well, that was happening to me, which explains why I hadn't hardly peed. And when I did pee, it was like the color of Coca-Cola. So they start giving me bolus fluids. And as that's happening, I'm actually texting with one of the coaches and who's kind of walking me through going. He says, basically, it was the best thing he could have done. He says, it doesn't matter that you're in the hospital. You're still here with us. And here, this is what we're doing now. And this is what you're going to do. And he was sending me pictures and whatnot and, through the whole process. And then got a little later in the day. And by afternoon, I was feeling pretty better. I had like 4 liters of fluid bolus in me. And I was like, okay. Then this voice in my head started saying, you got to get out of here. You got to get out of here. You came here to do something. You damn well better do it. So crazy me tells the nurse, yeah, I'm think you're probably going to think I'm crazy, but I know you're not going to let me leave, so I need to check myself out AMA. And she was just like, no, don't do that. Don't do that. Your insurance isn't going to pay for it. I don't care. I came here to do something. I need to do it. She said, well, give me 15 minutes. I said, okay, well, you can either take this IV out of me or I'm going to take it out right now and I'm going to get my clothes on. And so she said, just give me 15 minutes and we'll get the doctor in here to at least talk to you. So doc comes in, long story short, we talked for about 10 minutes and I'm thinking it's a shrink. I'm trying to size him up and I'm like, all right, what are they trying to do me here? They're trying to, you know, chapter me in the hospital because I'm not of sound mind or something. And the opposite was true. He was great guy. I told him the story. I said, hey, I felt like I came here to do something. I got to get out of here and go finish, you know, and he's, I get it. And long story short, he says to me, okay, I'll make you a deal. I will sign you out so you don't have to go AMA. I just need you to shake my hand and promise me that you're going to get done with this event. You're going to get on the plane the next day like you're supposed to. And as soon as you get back to Chicago, you're going to go right into the emergency room. So done, deal, done. So about 15, 20 minutes later, I'm ready to go. I let the coaches know. They think I'm kind of crazy too, but make me send them the doctor's slip that says I can go. And they come and scoop me up with the rest of the guys at the hospital. And it's the rest of it's underway. And this was finally got to me about 6 o'clock at night, 6:30 in the evening. And I think the thing went until like 2 a.m. the next day. So got there and finished it up. And that was life-changing for me. I literally thought I was going to die in a hospital, that was my first time. The first time I'd really been in California much. So in a weird place, alone, you know, absolutely alone, you know, and, wow. and my wife tried to say, okay, I'm getting on the plane. I'm going to come see him. And I'm like, and myself was like, yeah, nope. Just stay there. I'm going to be fine. I don't know why I told her that. Cause I, you know, truly I wasn't, but I didn't want her to worry. Didn't want her to freak out. She doesn't really like to fly. And she certainly doesn't like to fly alone. So I'm like, I'm not going to put her through that. But those changes, the mindset change from me for that day, that's kind of where the whole evolution started back in 2017 from where I am today. And it's just been an amazing, amazing ride.
Wow. That is insane. Insane. Crazy story. Wow. How much weight have you lost?
Right now I'm down about 70 pounds from when I was then at my heaviest. I've got about another, I've been down, but pre COVID I was down to about 275. I should be back down to that in a couple of weeks and feel much better. I gained some during COVID and not a lot of active, made excuses. You know, I had my normal little routine where I go to the gym and then the gym closes and I'm like, well, I can't work out. Well, yeah, that's a bullshit story that I told myself quite a few times and just, just you can find something to do somewhere, but I'm not really much of a runner. I'm more of a, you know, more of a weights guy, or if I'm going to do cardio, I'll do a Stairmaster or even the treadmill at an incline. Cause just, my knees are so tore up from you know, years of, you know, football and lifting and stuff that it's just there. I can't run for much. So I always tried to avoid it, you know, for the longest time. Sure. So, but
sure that, I do CrossFit. I've got a damaged shoulder right now. So I play racquetball probably five times a week. I either Peloton or run, walk every day. Like this morning I did 5 miles, but it's probably 60% running, 40% fast walking. And then tonight I'll play 3 games of singles tonight against a guy that I work with. We try to play every day, but we can't obviously. But the Peloton, I'll get on and do 15 miles or so. But I'm not, you know, I learned that through doing 75 hard, the 2 workouts a day. Now I don't do 75 hard right now because I like to have an occasional beer. You know, I have a beer on a Friday night, or I'll, you know, maybe have a drink of tequila or something. I'm not a, you know, trust me, I don't need it to, I don't depend on it like I used to. And I most definitely made some changes. Yeah, so I've learned the 2 workouts a day from doing CrossFit, but a rhabdo is no joke. I mean, a rhabdo kills people. I mean, I had one of our instructors get it, and then David Goggins got it also. When he was doing an event, doing a something out in the desert, I think he was doing a, I don't know, 100-mile race or something like that. So, yeah, that's a crazy story. I had no idea. No idea. I knew that you were on a fitness journey, but I did not know that.
Yeah, it's just, catalyst, man. It's just catalyst to change. You know, it's amazing what, you know, one particular event in your life, no matter you know, in the grand scheme of things, it doesn't sound like much, but just going through that, you know, and I was real bummed afterwards. You know, I was just like, man, I didn't finish. I was in my mind, I didn't finish. So like, I missed this part of it and missed that part of it. And, you know, I said to the coach, Coach Sam afterwards, I said, hey, you know, I'm having trouble process the fact that I didn't finish, you know, that I was, you know, he's like, you finished, because he's, you got exactly what you needed. You know, you got exactly what you needed out of this experience. And there's nothing that you could have done differently that would have had a bigger effect on you than the way you do it. You know, he's like, it's your story. It's your time. He's like, it's absolutely perfect. You know, like, and then the more I thought about that, I'm like, yeah, you know what? I did get exactly what I needed out of there, exactly when I needed it to happen. And it had it, you know, I mean, the huge catalyst. I mean, we wouldn't be talking here today. I mean, we absolutely would not. It's like, made a lot of hard decisions after that of just things I needed to cut out of my life and or put in my life and do more of this and less of this. And it was just like, it's just life changing. You know, just when you have that moment, you know, like yours was when your wife talked to you, when you have that moment and then the light bulb comes on and you can't go back from it. And, you know, certainly not perfect, you know, and certainly not, especially the last, you know, year and a half with the COVID crap going on, especially 2020, but, and once you know, you can't unknow something, and, you know, you know the possibilities and you know what you should be doing. And sooner or later, you're going to do it. I'm actually doing 75 hard right now. I'm on the first time I tried to do it, I got COVID like a week later. And okay. Then the second time I tried it, I tore a calf muscle like after like 10 days. But I learned from that. So I learned from both things. I learned definitely from the calf one, is because I didn't understand that with the two workouts a day, I couldn't go not at my age and the fitness level that I'm in. I can't go just 1,000% each one, because I don't have a dimmer switch. It's on off. It's go or yeah. No go. So I really need to learn it. Okay, no. You know, a brisk walk is just fine for one of the workouts, you know, yep. And then, you know, in the other one, listen to your body. If, you know, if you, like, I've even done like a, taken a, one of my workouts and done like a yoga type stretching stuff, like, you know, any, right. So sometimes it's like, I got to listen to my body this time. So I'm on day 15 today and definitely going to make it through this time and listen to my body and just, you know, get her done. But
so you're going through the Apex group, that John's group.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
That's awesome, man. That's a great, it's key. I've done 75 hard once, completed the first time I ever tried it back in October of 19. And actually I did it because one of the guys I worked with had cancer and that was my reasoning. And he made me a custom plaque that's actually in my office and it's got my dates. And then he made one for Andy for Sella. And when I met Andy the first time, I said, hey man, I got a buddy of mine that's fighting cancer. You know, would you help me do a video? So he shot a video to him and said, hey man, David, you're prior military, keep fighting. David has since passed away. But then David made Andy a custom, like out of a piece of wood, you know, 75 hard, like a plaque. And Andy at his home office, it's right behind his, you know, head when he's at his home office, you can see it right there. And he's like, man, I gave it to him in St. Louis. He's like, man, this is a really awesome, thoughtful gift. And I think that's a clue. A lot of times when people say, hey, what can I buy somebody that's got everything? Mm-hmm. It's not the cost of the item. It's the thought process behind it. You know, and I think a lot of times people buy people what they perceive as expensive things. And actually, it's more the thought that goes behind that gift that means more to that individual than money, especially when money's obviously not an object to a lot of the people that we talk about. But no, 75 hard is life-changing, man. I'll root for you. I since have failed it twice, which I'm ashamed to admit, but I did. I failed it twice. And something, you know, once you fail it, there's something. I'll go back and take a run at it. And I was thinking about going with John's group, but I just mentally wasn't ready, because if I say I'm going to try it, I'm not going to half-ass it. I'm going to try it. And now, like I said, I've came up short twice. One of them, I just simply fell asleep and didn't read the pages. And that's one thing about it is, if I say I do something, I'm going to do it. If I don't, then I'm not going to take credit for something I did.
It's always the little things that people seem to get it, you know, forgetting to take the picture or falling asleep before you read, or, you know, the little things. It's never usually a big screw up. It's just usually a, hey, a small error, you know, and I know you travel quite a bit these days as I do too. And that makes it, that's the most difficult part. I mean, that's been the times when, like, if I'm at home and I'm in my routine, it's not a big deal. You know, it's not a huge deal, but man, when you're on, like, I just flew down to for a support an Apex brother that was fighting. I don't know if you know Alan Belcher, but he was fighting in Shamrock's bare knuckle fighting championship league. Just signed a deal with them, and we went down because we sponsored him. So we went down, got a table with a bunch of brothers down there and a sister, and we but that whole thing, it's like you have all this good stuff, and you're trying to put other good stuff and not miss any time with the, you know, these people you go to see, and you know, catching an early flight, and I was up. Two in the morning, I had to do my first workout that one day, just at least, I'm like, I know if I get one in, then I'm probably good, because I can get one in, and but, you know, getting two in and everything else, and then the water, too, it's like, okay, I'm up at two, let me hurry up and drink a half gallon of water, and hopefully it gets through me before I get on the plane, you know, and worse yet, it's like, I was flying to Biloxi, there's even from Chicago, I couldn't get a direct flight for nothing, so it was always a connection, and I'm like, I'm so used to just flying direct that that's a pain. And, you know, it's like, okay, well, trying to be tactical and worried about this water and, you know, where can I pee? And, you know, it's just the things that you don't normally have to worry about. It's definitely takes some effort, but that's a good thing. I'm sure it's a lot of people, real good results. Well, I also know that thing. I do know, also know a bunch too, is you're in a bunch of different ventures. Obviously your car dealerships and a whole list of other things. What advice can you give people based on your experiences with, you know, whether it be partnerships or, you know, investments, joint ventures, any of those sorts of things, you know, just give me the, hey, if you wish you would have known, or, hey, here's a way I do it and this works because, or anything like that, that you think that, our listeners would love to hear.
Yeah. So, I learned from Grant Cardone, which I've known Grant for many years, and some people, you know, Grant's, he is a polarizing figure. You know, he's most definitely demands a lot of attention. I knew Grant when he was selling CDs out of the back of a car. And one thing that I learned from Grant, because he trained automotive people, and that's, I've been in automotive for, you know, 25 years. And one thing I learned from Grant is, hey, focus on your main thing. So say that if your main thing is security, if your main thing is, you know, owning gun stores and being, selling guns, ammo, everything else that you do. Or if it's within that same industry, I know the auto industry. I know how to efficiently run a car dealership. And if you look at it, we don't sell the most, but we're terribly efficient. And I can share best practices how we do that. We watch expenses. You know, we share profits with employees. So 10% of our net profit is shared through our, we share with our employees. So every one of our 700 employees, which I have about 175, they part own the company. So they have a vested interest to help make sure we're successful, because they get paid. The average employee gets about $4,500 worth of stock that they leave, they can cash it out, and that grows 12% every year. So that's one strategy. Plus we promote from within a lot. So if I'm hiring the best, whatever in the country, and you're the best at doing it, and you're happy where you are, kind of like football, how am I going to get you to come play for us? Well, I got to pay you more money than anybody else, period. So we pay fair, we promote from within, but we have a culture. So if I have 22 managers, 18 sold cars for me. So they've worked their way up. So that means they know how we do business. They know our culture. They know everything. So if you're a superstar and all you care about yourself, you don't work within our culture. So with that, people work their way up. We don't have the personnel expenses that some other companies have, because they may not have good culture and they just got to go hire the best. And that best, they got to pay the best money to. Now, that's some of the things we watch our expenses very closely. We're terribly efficient. We can get more done with less people. We have no waste at all. None. I mean, heck, when I go to my supply closet, my controller will ask me, how many highlighters did I take? And did I take the big ones or small ones? I part own the company. Some people would say, well, you know, who the hell does she think she is? Well, no, I'm happy. I'm really happy that she watches our expenses like that, right? So, like I go through the mail, I don't allow anybody else to go through the mail to initial off of it, because you know, that's one way to find out where money's being spent. I sign every check. So there's certain checks and balances that I'll share just best practices on business. Now, as far as I learned from Grant Cardone, a lot of people want to get side hustles, but they don't have a main hustle. So have a main thing that you know, save your money. So I formed an S corporation, which is a family owned business. My wife's part of it. My two children are on the payroll too. Everything we do outside the auto industry runs through our S corporation, which is called Simons Enterprises Inc., which is, this is something that I wish I had known years ago. Because when I own all these other businesses, I don't have a tax write-off. I can't put my personal expenses through the car dealership because I'm a minority owner. There's a majority owner and there's employees, and we don't mix our personal expenses with that, which if I own the dealership on my own, I could if I wanted to, right? So like there's a lot of car dealerships that have planes and boats and family on payroll. We don't have that. So when I have all these other entities, I don't have expenses to put, like when I go to Apex or Arte or Lion's Den or all these groups that I'm in, I would travel and I couldn't write off the expenses. So I talked to somebody much smarter than me, my accountant. He said, start an S corporation and that way it'll help reduce some of your taxes. So we formed Simons Enterprises, Inc. I meet people and I'll say this, hey, Steve, you know, I'm involved in these other businesses. If there's anything I can ever do for you, anything automotive, call me. Even if you don't buy from me, me or my team will help you. No obligation. If you have a question, I'll help you buy from somebody else. And that's okay, because if you think anything automotive, I want you to think of me. Then also, hey, if you have any business opportunities, investments with you, partnerships with you. Now, this is once I've gotten to know you. I don't want to partner up with everybody. But, you know, if you know anything, I've got good credit and I got capital. And I like to partner with people that know more in their industry than I do and are looking for silent partners. I don't want to run other businesses. I simply don't have time. And you wouldn't believe it, but that one comment to the people that I want to do business with, they'll call me back and they'll say, hey, you got any opportunities I can invest in? And then what I'll do is, if I'm invested in a project, I'll bring them with me. Or they'll call me back and say, hey, I got an opportunity for you, or I'm thinking about starting this business. Would you want to sit down? That strategy and being in the Apexes and the Artes and meeting people has led to me owning about 20 other different businesses. I don't do them all. You know, one advice I give people is, on a partnership, make sure that you get everything in writing. You have to get everything in writing and you have to set it up from the very beginning, because no matter what, you know, there's 26 million small businesses is what I've heard. 22 million are not profitable. Now, whether that's a tax strategy or not, they either break even or not profitable. So, and make sure you have responsibilities. Like, I started one company with three other partners. I said from the very beginning, guys, we own 25% of this. Y'all are going to do more work than me. I'm telling you right now, I'm busy. I part own and run. Like, I have a job. I run 5 car dealerships. When I'm not traveling, I'm at the car dealership. I'm here today. I'm here every day. I'm here Monday through Friday, half day Saturday. I'm off Sunday. I don't take days off. Now, do I travel? Yeah. Do I take family vacations? Yeah. But Steve, I have never just said, I'm going to take off today and go screw around. It don't happen. It doesn't. I haven't done it my whole career. But when I get to travel with Apex and different things, I feel like that's taking time off. Although I'm still working when I'm there because I'm looking for opportunities, and I'm not overbearing about it. I'm not going to blow up your DMs and ask you to buy from me. Matter of fact, you probably noticed in the first meetings in Apex, I don't say a whole lot. I haven't earned my right to say anything. I haven't earned the respect of the people that are there. When I do, and they ask me questions, I'll take more of an active role. But I got to pay my dues like everybody else. I'm one of the newer people there, right? So once I build those relationships up with them, from that, like I give an example, I'm supposed to get on a call today or tomorrow with Alvin. I'm going to invest in Alvin, one of Alvin's projects. But he and I just have to work out the details. So Alvin's in Apex, which is in real estate. I'm talking to Jen right now about some opportunities. I'm in multiple businesses with Apex and Arte people now, mostly Arte because I've been in that group 2 or 3 years. But to get back to what I was originally talking about, they're doing more work than me. And we're opening up these franchises in Florida. So they kind of said, let's get on a phone call. Hey, Scott, you were right. We're doing much more work than what we thought. What do you think would be fair? So we went back and renegotiated the deal. Some people would have sat and said, hell no, deal's a deal. I told y'all this from the beginning. You're going to do more work than me. I'm in Virginia. This is going on in Florida. I said, guys, what do y'all think's fair? We think this is fair. Sounds fair to me. that's fine. Because I don't let the greed or the money, I would much rather have that relationship with those people. But setting it up from the very beginning, getting an attorney involved, an accountant involved, you know, business partnerships, and man, I tell you, it's a tough gig. You know, it's a tough gig when you've got multiple partners. I would much rather invest in real estate, invest in a business. I mean, I've done multiple deals with Ryan Stuman. You know how he'll post in there in our groups, hey, I got this opportunity. You know, if you're interested, let me know. And he'll post it in the Apex executive group. I jump on those all the time. Ryan and I have done we've done a bunch of deals together. And they've all worked out very well. But you got to have capital and you got to have balls. You know, I mean, I wired $500,000 to somebody. That takes some balls. You know, I wire $250,000, $100,000. Yeah, I work really hard for my money. I told you what my background was, you know, and sometimes I'm wiring them and I'm sitting there like, wire, go do this. And it's a juggling act, but it's also a game, you know, it's a fun game to play. But literally my wife will say, where's all our money? I went to the bank account. We have no money in our checking. So honey, that's a strategy. Watch what'll happen. We're going to have all these deposits come in, you know, and said, see these deposits. This is the cash flow coming in and we're okay. But that money's out working for us, honey. We don't want it in there. And that's on top of life insurance. There's like a couple strategies we've done. We both max out our 401ks. She just left her job at 20 years. She had her own job, you know, her own. She's starting to work with me, which I'll tell you, that's been a little bit of a tough transition. I'm type A personality. It's a little difficult, you know, when you work with your spouse. You know, when I call and say, hey, I need help. I need you to go wire this. And she says, hold on. What are we doing? Like, who is this person? Time out. Hold on. I don't have time to explain. Go execute this. I'll explain it to you when I get home. She says, this is insane. I said, honey, I've been doing this for 15 years. We had an agreement years ago that I would handle. This is not, she's not, you know, some people say, well, your wife's a doormat, whatever. It's not true. Hey, I will handle the money. You'll never have a financial worry in your life. Now, I'm going to bust my ass and I'm going to work. So if you want me to sit on the front porch and hold hands until we get old, that ain't me. This is my goal. This is what I want to accomplish. And I hope you support me on it. But if you don't support me on it, we're probably not going to work because this is extremely important to me. Now, some people say, well, you're a male chauvinistic pig. No, I'm just honest. You know, how many times do people get in relationships and they don't clearly communicate their goals? Mm-hmm. And their spouse is like, well, what if I come first? Well, no, you do come first. I'm doing all this for you. But, you know, I'm proud to say that my wife's never had a financial worry in her life. Now, have we had financial worries? Yeah. It's just I've had it. She hasn't had it. And I don't know what that's worth. Number one reason why marriages fail is money. Number one reason why small businesses fail is lack of capital. You know, but it's stress because I don't let that money sit still. I tell you, man, I had a back in 2019, going into 20, half of my bonus got held up. And mind you, I got all this money out working and all these deals. Every penny we got's out working, different deals. And I've been working on these deals with people. And all of a sudden, three real estate deals came in, a partnership came in, and this opportunity I've been wanting for 2 years came. Half my money is held because of that year, because we got PPP funds, this, that, and the other. And part of the strategy was don't pay any dividends. So in that December, I had to come up with $1 million to take advantage of these. I didn't have the money. If someone offers you an opportunity to invest and you don't come up with the money, they're not going to call you anymore. And as a matter of fact, they're going to tell you, hey, don't deal with Scott. He's full of shit, right? And you know what? I wouldn't have blamed them. So I am stressed out. I sold my Lamborghini. I sold things. I called people that I'd done hard money loans with. And I said, I hate to do this, but I need to call my loan. Can you pay me back? Yeah, because I do hard money loans. I fund home flippers. You know, I'm into a lot of stuff. I had to call people and say, hey, can you do me a favor? I've been there for you. I need to call this. And you know what? It stressed me the hell out. It took me about 60 days, but I came up with the money. Now that was stress. And a lot of people say, well, you're doing really well. Why would you do that? Why would you go through that stress? Just sit back and you're making good money running car dealerships. No, it's not how I'm wired. I'm not wired that way. You know, I would be honest with you, I'd get bored. But that's a different type of stress. Some people said, hey, just tell them you ain't got it. No, them people, I worked on them relationships for years. You know, I wanted to have those relationships, and it stressed me out, you know, but it was a different type of stress. It would have been missing an opportunity type of stress.
That's fascinating. I think, you know, that's so it comes back to, like, for me, like, some of the things, like, since Apex is that I've learned, especially from the, you know, a lot of the folks in executive is, and I think a lot of people listening will understand this, is there's so much bullshit floating around about money that's just simply not the right way of thinking. And when you look at the math, because the math doesn't lie, you know, you can't, it the things start to show up. But like for me, I'd always been conditioned, you know, my whole life, what's success? Well, success is you find a place to work for, you put in 30 years, 35 years, whatever, you get a pension, you know, you get your house paid off, you have a car or two that's paid off, and then you have some money in the bank and a CD. That's success. That's as good as it gets. Well, so I started getting, you know, a little more successful and you know, did that chain of thought. So I'm like, okay, well, almost got our house paid off. Well, and then I start talking to people that actually, you know, understand how to make money work for your money, work for you, and all those sorts of things. And the simplest explanation was, hey, why are you paying off your mortgage? Because I thought I was supposed to. Well, how much interest are you paying on your mortgage? Oh, it's from a few years ago. I think we were like at 3.39 or something like that. I said, all right, well, how much can you make if you invest that money in your business? How much can you make even in a real weak fund on the stock market? Well, at least a minimum of 10%, probably a lot more. So, okay. So, hey, moron, what's 10 minus 3.9? Well, that'd be 6.1. Well, that's how much money you're giving away as a percentage based on every dollar you're paying on that house. You know, if it's cheap money, that's good money. Don't pay it early. You know, if it was flipped around, like, you know, we've been in some places, points in time where, you know, it's not beating inflation or whatever, where, hey, your loan's at 10% and the most you could make on it is 6, then, you know what, pay off that loan as quick as you can. But just little simple things like that of, hey, what is money success? What is, you know, what is the best possible scenario I can put my family in? I've learned so much in the last, you know, 6-8 months. It's just unbelievable. And then you have people that are, you know, like your Dave Ramsey's or whatever, preaching this and preaching that. And, you know, there's a few things that he gets right, but a lot of it's just like, just fundamentally wrong. Just the math doesn't make sense, you know?
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, you know, my parents, I saw them have a good life, but, you know, I saw these people count, not them, but other people too. Well, yeah, them, you know, this is how many days I got and how many years I got to retirement. And I'm like, man, they're already walking dead. They're already retired. They're already, you know, I don't want to count. I didn't want that life. I didn't want that scarcity mindset. And, you know, luckily I said, that's just not what I want. And I don't live that way. And, you know, leverage, some people don't believe in it. Some people absolutely don't. I just saw someone just post, you know, one of our Apex sisters, hey, I'm debt free. That's perfect. Good. You know, when I look, I think I owe over $20 million in different things. That's all positive cash flow on that $20 million. You know, so take the $20 million times the percentage of what I'm making above what I owe, I'll owe $20 million. Because if you really sit and think about it the other way, take the amount that I'm borrowed against versus what I'm making, that's what I'm making on $20 million. I went and you have life insurance that you can leverage. Almost 100%, and I still have the life insurance. You've got actively managed funds that you can leverage up to 75%. You've got HELOC, home equity line of credit. You know, I took out $500,000 on my house that I got just sitting there to take advantage of opportunities. Because when I got stressed out and had to liquidate a bunch of stuff, I said, I'll never do that again. So what vehicles can I go into where I can access that money? That problem now would not be a problem. because I didn't, that those three things I just mentioned, HELOC, you know, being able to borrow against your investments, and then the life insurance. You know, I could put $500,000 in life insurance policy, turn right around and borrow that $500,000 to get it out working for me, pay 2 or 3% on it and get out there. I mean, most of my money I'm getting, you know, 18%, I would say on average. So 18 minus 3 is 15. Plus I'm still getting the benefit of whatever it's getting out there by not liquidating. So I learned leverage from Grant Cardone. Now, if it all took a tank, what would happen? Well, I still have enough equity in there that I would be fine. And that's not the only assets that I have. But no, I completely get what you're saying. And that is the American dream, you know, is own a house, which I do believe you should own the house. I don't agree. Grant, you know, some people say don't own a house. And I don't agree with that. Like first house we bought, we was a starter home, and then we turned it into a rental property. I don't believe that. You know, I do believe home ownership is smart, although I think it's would be for the generations coming up, I think it's going to be more and more difficult with how expensive housing is getting. And plus, I think the generation coming up don't want the white picket fence. Yeah. They want a nice place where they got a nice pool, where they got, you know, they don't have to cut grass. They got a nice gym. You know, the luxury condos I could see, or condos I could see really coming up. They don't have to take care of that house. They don't want to waste time doing that, you know? But yeah, leverage, which you just talked about, as long as you put it in investments where I know for a fact I'm not going to lose. I'm only losing on one investment out of all those, and it's a tax write-off, and it's something good for the community. We opened up a multi-million dollar, 90,000 square foot sports complex right before pandemic right here in town. It's great for the community. We probably should have made it a nonprofit. We didn't. But it actually helps me on my taxes, and it's good for the community. That's the only investment in all of those I'm net losing money on. So all of them are, what am I going to make? Am I going to make 12, 15, 18, 21%? Is it going to be a 2X, 3X? I mean, one of the investments I got in, a friend of mine, because he liked me, allowed me to get in, it's about ready to be sold. It's going to be a 10X multiple. 10X on 100K is a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and he had a million in it, and he kept 900,000 and gave me 100,000 because he liked me. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
You know, because he just made me a lot of money. He looked back and said, man, I didn't know I was going to do that. Well, I said, man, I really appreciate you. Thank you. I'll grab dinner for you and a few drinks sometime.
There you go.
I'm sure I'll do something nice for him. Of course, you don't count your money before it happens.
Yeah.
You know, a couple of things that I've learned recently that I just should be common sense. Don't ever make sure you get everything in writing very beginning, and make sure you think everything through. Whose responsibilities are what? What's the exit? How can you get out? Make sure you vet the people that you're in partnership with. A lot of people say, but very few people do. A lot of people say they have money, they have this, that, and the other, and they can put on the perception they have a lot of money, but what can they write that check for, or wire that money for? You know, that's the difference. You know, cash is king, and who's got the cash, and are they successful in other businesses? You know, so yeah, make sure you get everything in writing at first. Make sure that you vet the people that you're doing business with. And make sure that you, you know, kind of like the industry that it's going into, you know, like we're going to put up PFIT franchises in Florida. Those are going to help solve obesity. Those are going to do really good things with the Arte brother virus, that we went down. And, you know, when you do a partnership, is it the individual that the reason why they're being successful, or are they running the play, which you hear Andy Frisella talk about all the time? Well, we went down and visited Aaron Nash. He's super smart, but his company, his PFIT franchises, they got the playbook and they're running the play. So then that means we could take that playbook to other towns there in Florida and run the play. He's got good people, really good people, but Aaron's not in there every single day. He was at one point. He's not there. He doesn't have to even go in, and they're operating. Well, that's a dream for any of us business owners, right? Is that you've got a business that's there functioning without you being there. So those are just some things that I learned, you know, going through this. Also, don't invest in a second deal with somebody until your first deal pays out. What I mean by that, you've got your capital back out of the first deal. That's some things I've learned here recently that I didn't know before. It's kind of common sense, right? But still, you know, there's some deals I've done 2 or 3 deals with. I'm like, wait a minute, they paid the interest, but I haven't got my principal back yet. And someone's advising me, it's like, don't do that. Don't go into what happens if you're doing 2 or 3 deals and it's a bad deal. He's just paying you interest on it, you know, or she's just paying the interest on it. So those are some things that I've learned. And I've been real fortunate, Steve, man. I've gotten around and you heard my story. I'm not the person I am today, thank God. And I'm no longer the person that I was then either. I was always a good hearted person that would try to do anything for anybody that cares very deeply about his family and his friends and his community. I just had to just get clarity, and I had to, know that I can't do all this alone, that I've got to be a good person and serve and give back to others. And when you do that, you'll have someone call you and say, hey, I'm gonna let you in on this deal. Oh, by the way, 2 years later, I think we're about ready to sell out. It's going to be a 10X. And I'm like, wow, you know, that's pretty cool. You know, and I told somebody about it. And they're like, when they first let me in, they're like, oh, he must know, you know, negative thinking. Oh, he must know it's a bad deal. And he's just trying to get 100 of his K money back. And I was like, no, I don't think so. I think this is a really good deal. You know, it's an organic chicken company. And it helped with COVID. And, you know, we got a little lucky, but you got to have some luck in this.
Yeah, the harder you work, the luckier you get, you know. Isn't that always true?
For sure.
Well, we're about out of time here, Scott, but I do always want to end of the show. We always ask if I have a guest guy, I always ask them. Otherwise, if I'm on my own for that particular show, then I give one. But what is the one single productivity tip that you would give anybody, or especially business owners, just to help them get more done in a day?
Get up early. You have got to get up early. We are competing in a world, and you've got to think about it. Is I don't wish harm against people that I compete with, but I have a fear that I could fail any day. I've about mathematically made it impossible financially. However, I feel like that someone is out there, and I think Mark Cuban has this quote, work like someone's working 24 hours a day to take it all from you. I literally wake up thinking, I've got to go get it today. Like my life depends on it. My family's life depends on it. You know, I go to bed early. I get up at about 4 o'clock, 4:15, 4:30. I moderate Clubhouse at five to about six. But I'm working out on a Peloton, or I'm walking/running. From there, I work out that first workout, which is really important. Your health, man. As you and I both know, you can win in all aspects of life, but if you don't have your health, what do you have?
Mm-hmm.
Really? You have nothing. And it's so easy, man, because guess what? You just buy the bigger clothes. You know, you go from a 34 to 36. Next thing you know, I'm buying a 42-inch waist. You know, I go from wearing a medium up to a double XL. I look like I got on a picnic table, you know, because I didn't want to deal with it. I just said, oh, man, they must have made this tighter cut. No, my ass got bigger. I was fat, you know, just plain and simple. And, but, you know, getting up early and going to bed early, you know, people sit up, you know, there's a reason why our body needs vitamin D. If you sit up late at night in darkness, you're going to worry about a bunch of shit that most of it's never going to happen. And you're going to worry and doubt creeps in. And when you allow yourself to have downtime. That's why I booked all these podcasts. I mean, I'm busy all day long. My calendar's insane. I've got my wife's assistant. I got an assistant here, which they won't even allow me to touch my calendar. So when you book something or I book something, I have to send to them. They put on my calendar. I'm not allowed to touch my own calendar. I'll mess it up. But, you know, one, when you sit around and you're little and you have time, doubt creeps in. You know, you start doubting what you're doing. Who you are, could you do more? And then if you stay up late at night, you know, I don't know about you, but most times I got in trouble in life, it was up later than what I should have been doing things I shouldn't have been doing. So, you know, just getting up early and tackling that day, man. And those couple hours I get advantage on everybody else, it comes into really good use. I mean, I've done more before 8 than a lot of people may do all day. And I wouldn't change it any other way. And if you have that problem, just start going to bed a little bit earlier, set that alarm clock. So if you get up at 6, if you get up at 7, start to go to bed at 11, start to go to bed, lay down and start like reading something at like 10:30. Then set your alarm for 6:30, set it across the room. Then once you get up at 6:30, set it for 6, set it across the room. You'd want to be able to, your ass to get out of the bed and your feet hit the floor to make sure you have to go turn it off. If not, you'll just reach over and turn it off. If it's in bed with you, you'll just turn it off and go right back to bed. And then guess what? You'll start getting tired. just start getting tired where you don't like, shit, I'm going to bed. A lot of times I'm in bed by 9:00, 9:30, and I'm asleep. I go to sleep like that because I've given it all I got every single day. So yeah, I would say productivity would be, don't stay up late, get up early and hit the ground and man, make the most out of it, brother. Today is, tomorrow is not guaranteed. And when it's my time to go, man, don't anybody mourn, celebrate, because I've had a damn good one. I've lived every day like it's like my last.
That's awesome. There's absolutely nothing better we could have ended on. Well, thanks so much for joining us, Scott. I know my everybody here is going to love the message you just delivered and just so much value. So I'm gonna have him put all your contact information in the show notes. So if anybody needs to hit up Scott for a new T-Rex like I may or may not have just did, or anything else in between. He's got just about every brand out there. So hit him up and he will connect you with one of his great managers. I will say he talked a little bit earlier about team and about taking care of people, whatever. And thus far my experience with Ben, one of his guys at his Dodge Jeep Ram dealership, has been nothing short of fantastic. And he's up early too. So Ben and I have had some interesting conversations while I was actually on a walk run. So it's pretty funny that you say that, but thanks so much for joining us. Thank you all for tuning in. If you think anybody else could value this, get value from this message, please share it, subscribe to it, share it all out everywhere. We want to get the message of the Tactical Entrepreneur and some of the great guests we have out there for everybody to hear. Thank you so much. We will see you next week.
Thank you for listening to the Tactical Entrepreneur Podcast. If you're still listening to this episode, that means you gained some type of value. So if you could share this to a friend, leave a review, and make sure you subscribe so you never miss an episode of Tactical Entrepreneur Podcast.